So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at our rivers and lakes and maybe some cleanup issues that are initiatives that are going on. We want to enjoy, obviously, and preserve those waterways as best we can. And we have some folks from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources who are trying to do just that, as a matter of fact. Pamela Toshner is the Water Resources Management Specialist at our Wisconsin DNR, also leads the department's work on the Healthy Lakes Initiative. And Pamela, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry. Pleasure to be here.
And Carol Shaw, our guest as well. Carol is the section chief for the Lakes and Rivers Group at the Wisconsin DNR. And Carol, thank you so much as well for being with us.
Great, Larry. Thanks to meet you.
Let's talk first about the Healthy Lakes Initiative. It's been a while since we brought it up on the show, and maybe let's go back and talk about what the initiative is all about. And Pam, you're leading the work on that, so talk a little about it.
Okay, I'm happy to talk about that. First off, I just want to thank our Healthy Lakes team and all the partners who helped us build this initiative. In Wisconsin, we have something very unique, and it's called the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership.
Mm-hmm.
That is a statewide partnership that includes Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, UW Extension Lakes Program, and a statewide nonprofit, Wisconsin Lakes, along with the many lake organizations, counties, and other partners, and of course the citizens who own lakeshore property. All these people participated in the development of Healthy Lakes, and we're going to continue to learn from and with each other as we move forward. Healthy Lakes is a new statewide initiative launched in November 2014. It promotes relatively simple and inexpensive best practices that lakeshore property owners can install on their property to protect and improve water quality and habitat. There's a couple important points in regards to Healthy Lakes. The best practices themselves are intended for our most typical lakeshore properties.
Okay.
So they're probably not appropriate for really steep slopes, areas that have visible substantial erosion. In those cases, we suggest that people work with their county land and water conservation departments. They're a great resource. An experienced landscaper, or even a professional engineer. Another important point is that the best practices are small steps that lakeshore property owners can directly control. So a lot of our lakes have more complex, large-scale management challenges. The beauty of Healthy Lakes is it's really in the citizens who own that critical lakeshore property. In that regard, our team had the opportunity to tour many of these Healthy Lakes projects in October. They're throughout the state right now. I think we had 100 projects that are going to be installed on about 50 properties statewide from southeast Wisconsin north and back to the northeast again. And we visited with many of the lakeshore property owners, and they're thrilled with the results. It was just great to get out there and see folks. They're putting in rain gardens, native planting gardens, something we call fish sticks, and they want to do more. What Healthy Lakes is, as far as the best practices, we've chosen 5 best practices, or relatively simple projects that lakeshore property owners could implement on their own. If they're not comfortable doing so on their own, they could work with a county partner, a lake management consulting partner. We're learning that in certain communities, there's retired engineers and master gardeners who are willing to do
a lot of work, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Well, we can touch on those best practices as we move along today. But, you know, education, and Mike in Castle Rock, we'll get to you in just a second. Hold on there. The whole business of education, I think, has been really quite interesting to me. I had a chance to play a small role in one of the education efforts along the lakeshore. And I think that's been I hope it's been effective, Carol.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, things we've done more recently is really trying to investigate what does it take people to change behaviors, not so much just, okay, I know that this causes a problem, but what are
actually
you going to do about
something,
it?
Yeah.
Trying to investigate that. So it has been kind of neat, some of the research we've done lately to get into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've applied that in the Healthy Lakes Initiative. And the idea here is little steps people can get into. They want to do something, but if you overwhelm them, they'll just step back. But if you give them something little to go after, they can do that. They feel confident. Then they can take bigger steps.
Take the next step after that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go to Mike in Castle Rock. By the way, you can join in, too, if you have a question or comment. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. And now, Mike in Castle Rock, thanks for calling.
Good morning. I'd like to know what you folks are doing about non-point source pollution. In the lakes, you know, we have it out here in the streams, which apparently you've done nothing about. And that same thing applies to rivers. So I'd like to know what has changed.
Well, first of all, non-point source pollution is very ubiquitous, if you will, or it's everywhere in the watershed. And you say it, like you say, it affects streams. What happens in the watershed affects streams and affects lakes. So, you know, depending on where you are in the landscape, there's all sorts of things that we can do to manage non-point source. It's basically, though, trying to make sure that the water that comes down, rainwater, is infiltrated or soaked into the ground rather than allowed to run off and pick up, whether it's debris or sediment or cow manure, and flush it directly into the streams. We try and park that water somewhere to let the sediment drop out, and then also give it some time to infiltrate and filter through vegetation. So there's different best practices. We talked about that with lakes. There's best practices that farmers can use to minimize runoff on their farm fields or their feedlots. What we're talking about with healthy lakes are things people can do right on their shoreline to be a part of the solution, dealing with rain gardens, mm-hmm. mitigating the runoff from their rooftops of their cabins, or making sure there's good vegetation on the shoreline to filter rainwater. In urban areas, we do all sorts of things with construction site erosion control. Those are big open sites. The idea there is, you know, you've seen silt fences and things that people put up during construction sites to keep the sediment out of the streams. So there's a variety of programs. We have grant programs, education programs to teach people so they can learn about how to manage non-point source. There's grant programs for urban areas and agriculture areas to install devices or change the landscape so that we minimize non-point source pollution.
I was thinking, you know, I don't think it's fair to say that hasn't done anything done, because I'm thinking about one of my favorite trout streams, you know, Black Earth Creek, that's happens to be in Dane County, and there, I know there have been a lot of projects to minimize non-point pollution from farmland, for example, in terms of what's going on along the bank, stream bank, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the Yahara Pride is a area north of Lake Mendota, and one of the things that they've been doing a lot there is just planting a cover crop in the winter and not leaving the agricultural field bare all winter and going into spring. That's when you get a snow melt and a rainfall event, and you can get maybe half the pollution in a year in one event. And so if you have some winter rye or some kind of cover crop on the field, mm-hmm. you minimize that kind of runoff. So
that's one way that's just one example. Yeah, thanks, Mike, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. And Marcus, by the way, on Facebook commented that retention ponds, it's another area that really have done a lot of good or do a lot of good, and some interesting vegetation planted around those retention ponds.
Yeah, that's you see that in urban areas. New construction often has to install these to minimize the runoff. The thing we're worried about in urban areas is the paved surfaces generate a lot of runoff, and that creates flashy events and streams that erode the banks and also carries all the sediment and things that are on the parking lots and impervious surfaces mm-hmm. into the stream. So the retention ponds are a way to intercept that and, again, mm-hmm. get the sediment to filter out. So you see a lot of those in Madison. And if we have existing urban areas, sometimes we go in and restall these, or call retrofitting the area so that you have a better drainage system.
David in Wisconsin Rapids up next with a comment. Hi, David. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I live here in central Wisconsin, and I like to think I snorkel more than anybody else in the state. Sometimes I go 50 times a summer. And there's some lakes that I've snorkeled that are really disappearing. Huron Lake, which is, I believe, in Washera County, should be about 46 feet deep. I think it's probably down to 35. But Wolf Lake, which isn't far from there, was about 19 feet, and now I don't even think you can swim in it. Same's true for Long Lake and Plainfield, and it's because of high-capacity wells over-pumping. And I just want to say I think this is a violation of Wisconsin's trust doctrine, which states the water belongs to all of us. Mm-hmm. And I really wish... I know the DNR does some good work, but it seems like they're turning their back on the Wisconsin Trust Doctrine. I wish that would change.
Hmm. Comment, Carol?
Well, he's talking about the Central Sands region, the central part of the state. It's a kind of a high landscape. There is a lot of groundwater withdrawal there for the high-cap wells. We've also been in a long-term, you know, not really a drought, but a low precipitation period, so there are a lot of lakes that are challenged, I would say, with their water. They're losing water. The Truglet Public Trust does apply to groundwater, and we are doing some studies up there, working with the people involved and trying to come to some resolution on how to manage those water levels up there. The court's been involved as well, so there's some recent court decisions that we're trying to deal with. So I wouldn't say that we've abandoned the public trust, but sometimes it takes a very long time to resolve some of these issues.
Talking today with Pamela Toschner and Carol Shaw from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, taking a look at rivers and lakes cleanup with them. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at rivers and lakes cleanup on the show today with our two guests, Pamela Toschner and Carol Shaw of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Pamela leads the department's work on the Healthy Lakes Initiative. Carol is the section chief for the Lakes and Rivers Group at the DNR. Questions for them, join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. We had a Facebook question from Eric. How do we know that fish sticks can really make a difference for healthy fisheries? What sorts of lakes would fish sticks be helpful for? And Pamela, I'll turn to you for that one. Somebody's probably wondering what the heck are... I used to eat fish sticks when I was a kid, but that's not the kind of fish sticks we're talking about, obviously.
Sure. Fish sticks are clusters of trees, whole trees that are brought in from outside what we call the buffer area, so well beyond the water's edge. They're placed usually during winter on the ice and cabled to shore. And then the following spring, the ice melts, the trees settle into the lake, and within years, it looks like they had fallen in naturally. So a side note in regards to that is if a tree falls in your lake, leave it there. It's okay to leave it there. Unfortunately, we're kind of cultured to think we need to clean that woody habitat out. We know that all fish species use that woody habitat at some stage in their lives. So to answer Eric's question, we know there's science there just showing that different fish will relate to the woody habitat at different times. The Center for Limnology folks at UW-Madison have also done some studies on what happens when you remove wood. And they did see substantial changes in fish communities for certain species. Also related to that is one of our research scientists here at DNR, Greg Sass, and others are embarking on a 10-year project to really dig into how does woody habitat affect specific fish species and what are the changes at a lake-wide scale. So we'll be able to answer that question much better. That shows the importance of long-term research related to some of these projects. As far as what sort of lakes would fish sticks be helpful for, they will probably be most helpful in the lakes that are most developed where wood has been removed through time.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
We know that when people move in, again, they clean up their shorelines, and that can actually be detrimental to lakes. That being said, we're not encouraging or telling people to drop trees all along their dock or the areas where they swim. We get into a little bit of sticky situations on sites that have high ice energy. So if there's big ice masses in spring bumping up against the shore, that may not be the greatest site for fish sticks. So it depends a little bit on lake type, the level of development, and the shoreline character of the lake.
Very interesting. Some of the places like Manitouish Waters or some of the flowages, do we lower does the DNR in charge of sort of maintaining water levels or lowering water levels during the winter period? And that just came to mind because of Pamela's comment about ice moving.
Well, most dams have an order, a water level order on them that's
okay.
Set. It's not necessarily set by the department. It's a number that we often come up with, but it's set by rule or by the court. And
sure.
So a lot of lakes, it's different across the state, but there are regulations. They try and keep the level within a certain maximum and minimum year-round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Rocky in Nishkoro has a question. Rocky, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I just moved up to Washoe County about 5 years ago, and in the last 5 years, we've had one drought and haven't had a real lot of snow or anything. So your caller that was talking about scuba diving, I think is kind of off base. I think it's more Mother Nature reducing the water levels. What's your DNR say about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly a factor. You have to have rain and groundwater recharge in order to keep those lakes up. So it's, you know, it's a dynamic. Your question was, how long does it take? I mean, if we actually have some lakes that are lower in the landscape in the watershed that are flooding. And while we have other lakes that are high, they're the highest part of the landscape, those are going to take longer to recover from a drought.
Yeah, and actually, I see moisture levels, and of course, we've got our weather guys are coming to join us in about 20 minutes, so I can probably ask them that question. But we had a period in northern Wisconsin where it was year after year for several years, way low on moisture, rain.
Right, 5 years or more. There's a lake in the northern Highland Forest that's had a gauge on it since the 30s. The USGS has had it. And it goes up and down. You can see a very bouncing pattern to it. But if you drew a line through it all, ever since the 1930s, it's slowly become, the highs have become lower and the lows have become lower. So
so it's gone down.
There's a long-term trend there, yes.
Yeah. Well, Rocky, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your comment there. You can join in, too, by the way, as you're listening in at 1-800-642-1234. And Facebook question from Shelley, what are low-cost measures that lakefront property owners can take to help their lakes? That's a good question as well. And Pamela, do you want to
take a crack at some of that? Sure. I can share the five projects that we're suggesting through our Healthy Lakes program. That being said, there's many other things that property owners could do beyond those five specifics. The five that we're recommending are fish sticks, which I just explained a few moments ago. The second is 350 square foot native plantings or native gardens. These are small areas of contiguous native plants, including that ground cover layer, shrub layer, and tree canopy layer. All layers of plants are important on the lakeshore.
Mm-hmm.
The third project is diversion practice. That can be a simple trench or a berm that is placed perpendicularly to a path or driveway. And what it does is it intercepts runoff as it's moving down the path and redirects it to an area where it can soak into the ground instead of continuing down the path or driveway to the lake. The fourth Healthy Lakes best practice is a rock infiltration practice. And this is an excavated area. It can be hand dug or excavated with small equipment. It's backfilled with filter fabric and clean washed rock. And it's usually placed along rooftops or driveways or parking areas. And it collects runoff so it can soak into the ground. Then the fifth and final best practice is rain gardens, and many of your listeners may be familiar with rain gardens. These can be real aesthetically pleasing. They're similar to rock infiltration pits in that they're depressions or dug areas, but they're filled with native plants. The Healthy Lakes projects can be funded by DNR potentially up to $1,000 per each of those projects. So, and that's around average cost for small projects on typical lakeshore properties.
Okay, so now that would that be one property owner applying for that, or might it be an association? Or
DNR can provide grants to eligible applicants, and that would be have to be a lake organization, a local unit of government. It could be a tribal government unit. So it's a really important question there, Larry. We don't provide the grants directly to lakeshore property owners. There's a benefit to that, though, in that it really builds that local community capacity to build and manage these projects. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing citizens and their local community groups kind of come up with real innovative solutions and ways to communicate and run the projects. It's been great.
Yeah, I like that. I like that approach. And if you think about it, okay, well, if I'm sitting here, oh, I'd like to get some money to do that as an individual, but then you just go back, well, maybe I should get a hold of the Lakes Association and let's push to get that through as a group.
Right.
And then you're going to have, of course, if your neighbor is also doing what you're doing.
Right. That's the hope.
You're going to be a whole lot better off in the long run, your lake is, if everybody's pulling together on that.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, we had callers or more callers online, and Ron in Wallace, Michigan, actually joining us. Ron, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I'm curious to know about the mining operations on the Menominee River, somewhere between Iron Mountain and Marinette, Wisconsin. There's talk that there's going to be mining operations, and they will be dumping their effluent into the Menominee River. My question is, if they do that, and if they're already doing it, I don't know what the status of that mining operation is right now, but if they dump their effluent into the Menominee River, what effect will that have on the aquatic life of the Menominee River, and what is the DNR aware of this, and what are they going to do about it?
Okay. Let's turn to Carol Shaw. Carol?
Well, I don't know a whole lot about the particular situation he's talking about. Any kind of discharge, though, to a water does require a permit, and they'll have limits on the stuff that they can be dumping in as far as the pollutants go. And we'll apply the laws as they're on the books. I can't really speak for Michigan, but I know there were mines in Wisconsin that were discharging the Menominee River. They'd be regulated and under the Clean Water Act as well as Wisconsin law.
Okay, so there are. You're not going to just be able to start a mining operation and pour everything in,
right?
Whatever,
right,
wherever.
Absolutely.
That's just not going to happen. Gina in Oshkosh, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Ladies and gentlemen. First of all, I'm a great fan of the DNR. You've done a wonderful job and should not be cut back. The reason for this call is that about 46 years ago, we built on one of the channels on the western shore of Lake Winnebago in the greater Oshkosh area. And after a while, we began to have weeds sprayed in the summer, probably late spring, and it was effective. But in the last, and I had started that, got the permits and so on, and really coordinated it. I've gotten old, and younger people are doing this. And my question really is, it appears that the weed growth in those channels is much greater than it had been in previous years. And is my observation reasonably correct? And the question is, if so, what can we do about it?
Well, plant communities or the density of plants changes year to year. We see that a lot. But certainly over time, if we have a lot of non-point source pollution entering an area like he's talking about, it'll build up nutrients there, and that basically is plant food. So you will see over time more enrichment of the sediments, and that grows more plants. The other thing that happens is we get invasive species like Eurasian water milfoil that tend to be really aggressive new plants, and they, so if you get a new species in there, sometimes that will make it seem like you have a whole lot, and you do have a lot more plant material. What we can do over time is, well, there's a variety. Apparently you've been using herbicides. A lot of lakes harvest the weeds. They have machines that go out, particularly in the Madison Lakes, where we harvest the weeds out of the lake every year. And again, doing some of the practices that Pamela's talking about, or even practices in agriculture, is going to keep the plant food out of our lakes.
I think, and if you're along one of those channels, if you've got everybody kind of working together to make sure that you do the best job you can possibly do to keep things from going into the lake from your lawn.
Sure.
And everybody does it.
And there's always, the very dynamic systems, there's always some irony, but if we clear up the water and get more light penetration, we often get more plants because there's more photosynthesis opportunity there. So Lake Winnebago has been clearing up over the last few years, and they've seen a lot more plant growth on the Winnebago system.
But maybe different kinds of plants?
Well, yeah, you should hopefully see more diversity.
Yeah, a more diverse group. Mm-hmm. Well, and Gene could, where would Gene or anybody else go for these five best practices? For more information on those five best practices, or even on the applying for grant money for that?
Okay. If you Google Healthy Lakes WI, the first tab that comes up is our Healthy Lakes webpage, which right now is an informational webpage. It's housed with UW Extension Lakes Program. They've been fundamental in helping share information and build products related to this. Keep an eye out in spring, though, because that webpage is going to look much different. It's going to be more interactive and sophisticated. We're going to have demos and YouTube clips and all sorts of fun stuff. I'd also encourage Gene and others, anybody interested in Healthy Lakes projects, to contact your local DNR lake biologist or environmental grant specialist. As far as the grants themselves, the DNR website, if you just type in surface water grants on the search engine, it'll take you right to all the grant information.
There we go. Thanks, Gene, a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. Again, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Give a call. Or join up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I'd certainly love to hear from you. James in Milwaukee has a question. James, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Good morning. I was just wondering if whatever is causing us to have the, fish consumption advisory, is that getting better? I never had a thorough understanding of it, and does it vary across the state? I remember way back when there was only one or two bodies of water that had that advisory on them, and I think now it's a little more
broader,
pervasive. Just wondering if that's improving. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for calling, James.
Well, I think the question is about mercury, and mercury, first of all, the source of that in our waters is atmospheric. It's coming down. It's, I think, generated by coal fire boilers and coal fire energy plants, but that brings mercury, kind of rains down over the entire landscape. And he's right. Years ago, we used to look and find certain lakes, the mercury will be more likely to manifest itself quickly into fish tissue. So we did have some lakes that are more sensitive to mercury pollution, I should say. And as we started looking at it, we found that it is pretty much everywhere. All fish have some level of mercury. The good news is that those levels are dropping, I guess, from the pollution standpoint over time. It'll take a long time, though, for it to work its way out.
So we're going to keep up with the
there's some good information. It's a little out of my area, but there's some good information. If you went to the DNR web page and went into the fish advisory, you get a good background on that.
Yeah, and it's good to know that at least things are going in the right direction, right. For sure. Thanks a lot, James, for calling. Appreciate it. Mike in Bear Valley has a question. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Great show. Thank you so much for having it, Larry. Mm-hmm. I've got a question that I'm 66 years old. I've grown up in Wisconsin. I'm an artist, and I was wondering about the role of aesthetics in the Healthy Lake project. You know, for me, when I look at a project like this, I really see it as being kind of remedial, in that most lakes that are healthy have all of these things as part of it, and yet many people that are perhaps new to a wilderness type of experience have their own aesthetic sort of prejudice that they bring with them. And they, in many respects, you know, might be a suburban aesthetic, and they want their lake to look like maybe really clean, and they remove a lot of the elements that are part of the Healthy Lakes project, you know, things that are there originally. So I was just wondering about the role of aesthetics in the Healthy Lakes project, and I'll listen offline. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Pamela, you want to take a crack at that? Thanks a lot. That's an interesting question, the role of aesthetics.
Yeah, that is an interesting question, and Mike kind of nailed it there, because folks move from urban and suburban areas. We have more baby boomers retiring, heading up north in particularly, and they move there because they love lakes, they love loons, they like the wild look, but they have a tendency to clean things up again and mow the lawn down to the water's edge, remove trees, and that important natural habitat and aesthetic beauty. I'm certain most people don't do it on purpose. I think they have to do it, otherwise their neighbors or whomever is going to be upset with them. So we've really tried with Healthy Lakes to find a balance between kind of that purest, wild, natural scene and what lakeshore owners may accept as far as wild enough but not too wild. The native planting guidance includes 6 options, from bird butterfly garden to a more wooded look to low growing vegetation. We know in the past that folks don't want to lose their lake view. So we're trying to get the wild look back, Mike, but again, it's small steps, and it's sort of up to the lakeshore property owners to have a say in what things will look like.
Yeah.
And again, I think some of the feedback we hear is, you know, people were afraid that it would look messy, and then after they see it for a while, they start to like it. So, you know, it slowly does change some attitudes.
Yeah, I think you're right. Dave in Augusta has a comment on that. Hi, Dave.
Well, good morning. I'm a member of the Winter Lake group, and when I'm up fishing in the winter area, there's nothing more appealing to me than casting toward a shore that's natural. There's birch trees, pine trees, looking at somebody's yard on the shore that's completely manicured and weed-free and a windmill set up in it, this doesn't appeal to a lot of us, especially if we travel north. We want to get away from that. So not only having a natural shoreline, what your guest was saying, is better for the shoreline and for the lake and for the fish. It just is better for the tourist.
Well, thank you, Dave. I've often said myself, as somebody who fished muskie a lot, I much prefer casting toward a northern Wisconsin shore than I do toward John Nolan Drive in Madison. You know, it's just a different aesthetic. And so I think he's kind of, there is a medium here, a healthy medium between nothing and mowing right up to the shore, and what you've proposed, which is quite different from that.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Nagawicca Lake, I actually grew up on Nagawicca Lake in Waukesha County, and that's kind of a classic mowed to the water, rip-wrapped all the way around the edge, and they came in for Healthy Lakes grant funding through the city of Delafield. So to me, it's been rewarding to see that these suburban, urban areas are interested in taking some of those small steps too.
And so they're actually working on something there.
They are. They already put in a rain garden. Several property owners are doing native plantings.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. We had Paul wonders from Sturgeon Bay, who's noticed when he was golfing that there are a couple of feet of sediment flowing through the streams at the local golf course. Who would he contact to address that particular problem? If you see something that doesn't look right, essentially, where do you go?
Well, I think we have a headquarters office in Green Bay, and he could probably call there. There's if they went to the lake page and went to lake contacts, well, it probably wouldn't be the best contact, but surface water, he would be able to find a biologist that he could talk to. He could also go talk to the county. A lot of the counties would be in charge of, say, permitting that golf course and going through the process of doing the sediment and erosion control work with them, so the county might have some information about that, the county land office.
I would add, we have a 1-800 number if he thinks it's an actual violation. It's 1-800-TIP-WDNR.
Ah, I forgot about that. TIP-WDNR.
And it can be an anonymous call. If the caller leaves their contact information, though, we try our best to close the loop and let them know what the outcome was of the call.
And Michael on Facebook wondered if there's, besides the Healthy Lakes program, are there other grants or funding sources available to help local groups with the lakes and river protection?
Sure. This Healthy Lakes is actually just a small component of a larger lake and river protection grant program we have. So there's cost sharing available to do studies, and there's also then cost sharing to do bigger projects, like Pamela said, where you actually might have to be involving an engineer doing construction work. There's also a program called the TRIM, Targeted Runoff Management Grants, that are available. Again, there's program for agriculture and urban areas. So
so there's lots going going on and available on the DNR site, and actually on our Facebook page too at the Larry Mueller Show. We've got a link, so you just, if you happen to be there on the Facebook page, you can just click on that. We'll take you right there. And boy, the time flew by. Pamela and Carol, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today, and hope we'll have a chance to get you back and talk again.
Sure, Larry, enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks, Larry.
Pamela Toshner, Water Resources Management Specialist with the DNR. Carol Schall is the Section Chief for the Lakes and Rivers Group at our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Great to have them here. We'll have them back, and we'll talk again with them about lakes and river and cleanup and keeping those and trying to get the lakes and rivers that we have even cleaner than they are right now. Well, we talked a little bit about rainfall and the lack of rainfall that occurred for over a several-year period in northern Wisconsin. It's changed a little bit. We'll find out some more perhaps about that and also about our winter weather, which is definitely changing today as we speak. As I look out the window, I see a lot of snow, and that's something we haven't seen in much in southern Wisconsin. And we're getting snow in the Madison area and some other parts of the state as well. Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our weather guys, join us next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.